It's another edition of the Talking Mets Podcast here on this Sunday, May the 3rd, 2026. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can also get me on the new and improved TalkingMetsPodcast.com, chat for free, premium content, updates on the show, all at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Hope everybody's doing well here on this Sunday. Mets get a series, take 2 out of 3 from Anaheim. I don't think that's the big story this weekend. I think the big story happened with the announcement or the vote of confidence on Friday with David Stearns coming out and giving Carlos Mendoza the vote of confidence, with Anthony DeComo reporting that it also looks like Steve Cohen has no intention right now of replacing David Stearns. And then less than 24 hours after that, the Mets signed Luis Torrens to an extension. So while we're sitting here and starting to make plans to do something else this summer, and I talked about it a little bit over the premium content, it was one of the more depressing scenes when I was at Citi Field on Wednesday. Very depressing scene there, what I saw, obviously on a cold and rainy night, but a far cry from the energy you've seen out of that ballpark over the course of its history and certainly over the last few years. And, you know, with all the calls for Mendoza to be fired, with all the calls for Stearns to be fired, I think coming out, you know, obviously not a press conference, coming out on MLB.com with the house reporter DeComo giving everybody kind of a vote of confidence, putting it out there to stop the media speculation. You could say that that's just a way to calm everything down, put the wolves at bay. But to me, I'll tell you the truth, it's a commitment to staying the course of what they're trying to build or what they believe that they're building over here. Now, look, there are times when in a season, and Saturday night was another example, Mets lose on a dinkhead. Of course, the Mets didn't help themselves out. I think it's been in 8 extra inning games. For the 8 innings, they haven't been able to get the ghost runner in from second, which is really hard to do. A 50% failure rate on the ghost runner is really hard to do. They have all sorts of weird ways to lose. I even saw someone did an analysis over on X, and I can't remember what it was, saying the Mets are one of the more unlucky teams of the league this year. I don't need an analysis or a statistical number to prove that. I see that with my own eyes. But when you're in a bad season, bad seasons that have injuries, bad seasons that have underperformance, bad seasons that have just general poor play, crazy stuff happens. You always seem to have that cloud over your head and find a way to lose. And I think that's where the Mets are at. Now, whether or not they could just grin and bear this, start playing better, you got to start somewhere. You take 2 out of 3 from Anaheim. We thought that was the case against Minnesota a week or so ago. It was not. They got swept by the Rockies. Now they go to Colorado to play the Rockies again. Looks like it's going to be football weather over there with snow and cold and rain and all sorts of things that you thought was put in the closet once winter went away and once baseball started in March and April. But I guess in Colorado it has not. In the Rocky Mountains it has not yet. So we'll see. But, you know, for me, I think Mendoza staying is an indication of where this organization's at. With all the cries for making a change, to do something just to shake things up and maybe spark this club. And I find that laughable because when you go up and down the Mets lineup due to the injuries to Polanco and Lindor and the underperformance of Bichette earlier in the season and the growing pains of a Carson Bench and the disappointment of the young homegrown players like Beatty and Vientos and Alvarez, you literally have negative war position players up and down that lineup with the exception of Juan Soto right now. You have a plethora of trash or treasure names that we should only be talking about in the cold of winter. Names like Andy Ibañez and Austin Slater. What do you want any manager to do? Now, you want to get your pound of flesh because of what happened last year and you're still angry about that? Fine. But to me, and I think that this is a lot of the educated speculation that's going on in the industry, think of that it's a fait accompli that the Phillies will just hire Alex Cora at the end of the year. I'm not so sure. You know, Mattingly's son is the manager, and Mattingly has always wanted to manage, and Donnie's you know, had some bad luck with what happened in LA and then in Miami and things like that. If he gets a chance to manage and be successful here, you know, on the back half of his managerial career, I could see him just sticking around, especially if the Phillies, who I think were going to just all of a sudden, the law of averages with the kind of roster they have, they were going to play better. They weren't going to be a 100 loss team, nor do I think the Mets are going to be a 100 loss team, because I think they'll get some of their core players back before the season is out, and I think they're going to play better. You know, and I don't know how much longer they'll be able to survive and even compete with the lineup they have now, but I think they're going to play better. The law of averages say that. So the point is, I think a managerial change doesn't matter. But more importantly, I think that when you hear that if they were to make a change and move on from Mendoza, that some of the names that you would be hearing are Andy Green and Carlos Beltran, Kai Correa. I mean, Andy Green, San Diego, losing record, seems to have some respect in the organization and player development, but he is a typical extension of the front office manager, a guy that's nondiscreet. I don't think there's any fire there from what I've read about him. Not the most gregarious personality. Again, I don't know enough about the guy to make these statements other than what I read, but I think what you're going to get is another version of Carlos Mendoza. Well, if you're going to get another Carlos Mendoza, or that's what Stearns wants, it doesn't matter if it's Kai Correa, Carlos Mendoza, Andy Green. You know, maybe Beltran is the most intriguing out of all those names if he still wants to manage after what happened a few years ago. Does it matter at this point? If Stearns, because he's the player of baseball, he's the president of baseball operations, if he brings in another extension of the front office manager, honestly, I don't think it matters. I don't know why anybody would make a big deal about it. Now, there is some questions as to the preparedness of this team. Again, today you saw it with how they didn't know how many outs were out there. They seem to be in a malaise. There doesn't seem to be a great belief right now in that clubhouse. There doesn't seem to be an energy, and I understand that's what the fans are going off of. That's what they're looking for from a manager. I'm not sure that we can even make the assertion that Carlos Mendoza can't do that, because we really don't know what goes on behind closed doors. But let's face it, they're not going to bring somebody in that's going to be this fiery guy that's going to yell and scream and get players going. That just doesn't happen in the game today. And as far as legacy managers, bringing in a change agent type manager, a Dusty Baker, I think that those guys, they've aged themselves out. Alex Cora might be that one big name. And look, Rob Thompson is going to be available this offseason. He's an experienced manager, did well in Philadelphia. You know, maybe the Mets look up that way. But outside of a couple of names here, and Cora being the best of the best, everybody could be an organizational arm, and I don't think much is going to change in your view of that kind of manager. So it's showing that they're staying consistent and they're making a commitment to stay through how they build a coaching staff. They're not going to change here. If that's the report, if that's the rumor, the vote of confidence for Mendoza, they're going to stick to this. They're going to stick to Mendoza the rest of the year. They're going to obviously evaluate him at the end of the year and when his contract is up. And here's the thing. If they think they need to make a change because, you know, they just can't sell to the fan base and to the stakeholders, the media, Mendoza coming back, they're just going to replace him with another version of Mendoza. To me, you might as well keep Mendoza around. He already knows, you know, what he's doing here. He has a working relationship with Stearns. I know that doesn't excite you. Now, as far as the Torrens extension, see, I thought that was pretty revealing, too. And maybe I'm overlooking it. You're paying over $5 million a year for a backup catcher. But to me, there's a couple of different things that could be coming from it. First, and I think the most obvious one is, we're talking about in a couple of weeks, if this thing, you know, they're still 10 games under and they're floundering and they're looking like they're going to have to go on a wild run just to be in the muck for a third wild card. You know, we're talking about, hey, what can the Mets sell off? And Torrens was one of those names that I figured, hey, free agent, they could sell him off at the deadline, maybe get themselves some kind of prospect. I'm not saying they're going to get a big haul, but Torrens, because of that can of an arm, because of that defense, he's going to have some value out there for a contender. Well, they signed him to an extension. Now, this doesn't preclude them from trading him, but I think it's a lot less likely. So I wonder if that is an indication that they're not going to rip this team apart. They're going to see it through. You have to think. Now, I heard this rumor. I talked about this over on the premium content. The Mets have not made their single-game tickets, I heard, for the second half available yet. I don't know if that's true. Maybe somebody could find that out for me. Maybe I'll do some of my own research, too. If that's the case, Cone is going to be really careful unless he gets offered a haul for one of his pending free agent pitchers, a Peralta, a Holmes, you know, maybe Bo Bichette, you know, if he starts hitting. I could see them holding on to this roster and saying, hey, look, let's just hold on to the roster. Let's go out there and try to win as many games as possible. And then depending on the lockout and when next season and free agency starts, try to build on this roster where they still believe in the core players, the Sotos, the Lindors, the Polancos, the Bichette, things like that. And maybe they have another year under their belt of bench development. Maybe you put A.J. Ewing in the mix. Maybe something happens with one of these young positional players. Maybe Alvarez finally finds his bat. Hey, maybe they're keeping Torrens around because he's going to get more playing time, and Hayden Singer might become more of a backup catcher because they're going to move Alvarez to the DH, and maybe that's the best version of offense that you can get out of him, taking away his catching responsibilities, which he hasn't been all that great behind the plate, to be quite honest. So why not think about making him a DH? Why not trying to accentuate the one skill, the great power, the great bat that he was projected to be coming up through the minor league system? So when you look at that, you look at a team that right now is giving you some signals between bringing, you know, the manager a vote of confidence, signing the backup catcher to a multi-year deal, that they're not looking to rip this thing apart. Now, one of the things that could be on the table, and there was talk of an early trade season here. This could be a complete swing away from all things that we thought were logical. So you come into this season, you think the Mets are a contender. Things go horribly bad. They lose 12 in a row. And now they've got guys like Andy Ibañez and Austin Slater in the lineup, and every one of their young positional prospects, they're one of their top five prospects from the day that Billy Epler came in the organization, or pretty much the day that Cohen took over, into Stearns's beginning of his tenure. Every one of those positional prospects has flopped. I mean, marvelously. Benj has started to show something, you know, better at bats, great defense out in the outfield, great catch today, but he's still got some ways to go. He's hitting .179, but at least there's some hope there. So everything across the board here is going negative. However, they still believe that there could be something there, that there's enough of those guys to finally come around. It's only 30 ball games that we've been exposed to this treacherous play. Do they go out and do they take on a big salary? Is there a salary dump? The one thing the Mets have that no other team has, maybe except the Dodgers, and a certain degree the Yankees, is Cohen's appetite to take on salary. And without diving deep into it, but would they look at a Fernando Tatis Jr.? Would they look at a Mike Trout? Would they look, the Giants are struggling, Rafael Devers, bringing in an expensive bat? They need a bat. They need a big bat. I mean, Devers is hitting .211. I mean, he's 29 years old. Has he fallen off the cliff? He's got a ton of money owed to him. He's got another 7 years on an average of about $32 million left to owe to him till the age of 36. He's a corner guy, third base, first base, playing mainly first base in San Francisco, probably more of a DH. Again, you're kind of clogging into the same problem with a Devers that you were having with a Nimmo or Alonso, is that as you get late into those 30s, he's going to pretty much not be able to play the field. And maybe if you have Soto around, that's a problem. Tatis Jr., a guy that seems to, since the PED suspension, has fallen off the cliff a little bit, not the same hitter. A below league average hitter this year, only hitting .260, yet to hit a home run. Mike Trout, we all know about Mike Trout. He's a prodigious power Hall of Famer, even though he's had injuries over the last couple of years. You know, bringing Mike Trout back to the Northeast, age of 34, another 4 or 5 years left on that deal. Would that be something that the Mets would be willing to do to kind of spark this offense, put him in center field? Center field's a black hole anyway, right? Something along those lines. I heard also, what about Carlos Correa? Houston, has been out of it. Carlos Correa, would the Mets go down that rabbit hole again? He's actually hitting well. He's hitting .296, showing some of the old Carlos Correa. And, he's another guy. He's got a bunch of team options after 2029. But at the very least, over the next couple of years, you're going to owe him about $62 million after this year. So you're taking on some money. So would the Mets do something a little bit different? Try to do what, to a certain degree you don't want them to do, or what is not considered good organization building, just taking on bad contracts and giving the illusion of competition. Is it better for them to, you know, not compete? And I know that they don't have their draft picks because they've also, you know, they've given up, they've given that up with some of the free agent signings, or they signing guys with who are given the qualifying offer. But I do not think if they have a top five pick that they will lose that. I have to look that up. I'm not sure if they'd lose that. I don't think they would lose that. I could check on that during the break. But, you know, the Mets are in a situation where they're not just going to tank and trade off their veterans for prospects. They're going to give it a try in a 3 wild card and a 6 playoff team environment, knowing that they're going to get some of their guys back. They're going to continue to try to tread water. Maybe they take on a big salary, and away you go. Hey, by the way, leading the National League in ERA coming into the game and didn't hurt his cause. If you're going to sign Luis Torrens, think about maybe signing Clay Holmes to an extension. Maybe you get a little bit more of a team-friendly deal now in season. You need a veteran to anchor that rotation. You know, you look at it at this point. You have a rotation that'll be McClain, maybe Christian Scott, who looked really good the other night. Jonah Tong is starting to pitch a little bit better down in AAA. So you have those three kids. You put Holmes in as the veteran. And then you see, you know, Wenninger and maybe a Zach Thornton, a Will Watson, a Santucci. You have all these young arms. So really, when you look at what's going on here, Mets, they don't really think the manager is going to be that big of a deal. They're not looking for someone to entertain you or to entertain the media or a big name just to take the pressure off of Stearns. They're going to have an extension of the front office. If it's Mendoza, it's going to be Mendoza, or it's going to be somebody else. So don't get too crazy over the manager. I think in terms of Stearns, the way he loses his job or the way he's graded is how the organization pipeline goes going forward. That's the McClains, the Scotts, the Tongs, the pitchers, the young pitchers, the Wenigers, the Ilian Peñas, the A.J. Ewing, the Carson Bench, and who knows who else is emerging down there in the minor leagues. So I think that they see that start to bear some fruit. They're not going to punish him for Beatty and for Vientos and for Mauricio. I mean, you know, it just did not happen. It's not happening at this point. So what you really have right now is a commitment to stay the course. You may not like it. It may scare you. And look, is it old Mets to go out and get a bad contract like a Tatis Jr. and try to revive him? Well, if you're just losing money and it's not hampering your maneuverability on roster decisions going forward, who cares? It's Cohen's money. Now, you have to be careful with taking on a big salary contract, a Trout or something like that, because if the rules change in the CBA, well, then you might also have some dead money. And on top of that dead money, you're going to have you know, a situation where you're not going to be able to fix the roster, and it's going to be an albatross, similar to what we saw back in the day when the Wilpons owned the team. So that's never been the case since Cohen owned the team, a Robbie Cano contract, things like that, Yoenis Cespedes, whatever it may be. You know, those were not albatrosses like they were when the Wilpons owned the ball club. So, you know, that's where you're at. I think as the season goes on, I think what they're looking for is that, hey, you're going to potentially have A.J. Ewing up here sooner than later. You could have an outfield of Ewing and Bench and Soto. Not bad. You know, you'll play it out at first base. Maybe you'll acquire first baseman at some point. Maybe Polanco gets healthy and could play the position. Simeon's going to be there for his glove at second and veteran leadership. Lindor will finally get back at short. And then at third base, you'll have Bichette eventually when Lindor comes back. And he's actually been playing pretty good defense at third base, and you're going to expect his bat to come around. And then you figure out what you do behind the plate. Do you do Torrens for defense? Does Torrens remain the backup catcher? Does Alvarez slide over to DH? What can happen, and what's the deal there? So, you know, you have all that, and away you go. And I think that that's really where we're at with this club. I think it's not what you want to hear. I know that everybody wants heads to roll. I know that they're angry that there's all these 4A players. I saw tons of people angry that Vidal Brujan was called up. What do you want them to do? They're on their third shortstop. They lost their top 10 positional player in the game, shortstop in Lindor. They lost one of their top prospects, or their best position-ready prospect right now, which is arguable because, you know, with the way Ewing is playing at Syracuse. But, you know, with Mauricio, they lost him. What do you want them to do? Grab Ozzie Smith out of the minors? I mean, come on. I mean, you're starting to get down to the depth that you know, you expect to be only used for about 2 weeks and to be a plug-in, not to be core players in the lineup, up and down the lineup, in a situation where some nights you pretty much have Bichette and Soto, and that's about it. So that's really, I think, the big story for the week. And not taking 2 out of 3 of Anaheim, that's a step in the right direction, a long way to go. You have a month of good baseball before you could even say the Mets are back. You know, a series is not going to do that. You know, that to me is just a side story. The big story is commitment to the manager, commitment to the type of manager that they're going to have in the dugout, which I think is a front office extension, and bringing back a player on the roster that you thought would have been trade bait, but they give him an extension, which makes you wonder if they're going to make any move to wave the white flag this season. Cohen doesn't want that empty ballpark. Cohen doesn't want to be sitting in that ballpark in August with him and 12 of his closest friends, and be a national media joke, and he's going to have to take the hits and the punches, which is going to make it that much more difficult to recruit any big free agent coming off a bad season. You also are staring down a Soto opt-out in a few years. So when you really, it's all said and done, there's a lot of signs that the Mets are sticking to the plan. They're committed to the plan. They're committed to trying to make this thing work and push this thing forward, despite everybody kind of waving the white flag emotionally, mentally, and what have you. So when we come back, we'll get to some mailbag. I'll also talk about the positional players have been an issue. They're now coming up, the young positional players. Everybody's talking about it. But the question I think that has come up to me this week is, Mike, yeah, you went through, I listened to the show, I hear what you're saying about the Mets drafting and positional player development since pretty much Sandy Alderson was around. But why is it a problem now and hasn't been a problem in the past? I'll talk about that and more right after this. All right, we're back. You know, one of the other things that I really wanted to make this point before the break, and I didn't get to it, and I wanted to start out the second half of the show bringing it up. If you really talk about why would David Stearns believe a team that has played at a 62 Mets clip of wins, on average loses 2 out of 3, lost 12 in a row, seems to have a dark cloud hanging over their head, has 4A trash or treasure players littered up and down their lineup, negative war up and down their lineup, with the exception of Soto. Why would he believe that they could hang in there and turn this thing around while they wait for the Polancos and the Lindors maybe to make a big move, or Ewing comes up, or some of the kids turn around? Why would he believe that? Well, Fangraphs still has their pitching in the top 10 in baseball. Not in the National League, in baseball. They have their starters and their bullpen towards the back of the top 10. Now, maybe it's a little top-heavy because of McClain and Holmes, you know, Peralta, and not so great in 4 and 5, but Christian Scott, I think, is cleaning that up, and I don't think David Peterson's going to be as bad as he's been all year. I know they're going to make that into maybe a bulk game when Peterson starts. And the bullpen, I know Devin Williams has been disappointing, and Luke Weaver has been up and down, but Raleigh and Tobias Myers and Brazenbaum, they've been pretty good. I mean, the Mets bullpen, even Manaea, who got lit up against the Nats the other night, has had his moments. What's interesting is that the Mets are able to kind of navigate without excessive shuttling because they have these pitchers that could go multiple innings. And when they're down or their starter only goes 5 or 6, they could just pitch the rest of the ball game and save themselves some arms. So it's been kind of a blessing in disguise to a certain degree that they have these starters in the bullpen like Myers and Manaea. So I think that that's what Stearns is looking at. I think Stearns is looking at the pitching as being really an asset, which it wasn't in the second half of last year, and being the one thing that you can hang your hat on. If you've got good pitching, you're going to be in ball games. And if you're in ball games, you're going to win some of those ball games. In a lot of ways, you know what the Mets are right now? The Mets are the Miami Marlins. All these years of Miami would come into town, no offense, a 4A lineup up and down. But they would always have pitching, and they'd have some interesting bullpen arms. And it was an uncomfortable series, which usually they would find a way to lose Miami, because second division clubs always find a way to lose. But the games would be close, and you'd always be concerned that you'd run into one of their pitchers. It's kind of what the Mets remind me of right now. So, All right, let's go to the mailbag here. Let's see what some of you guys have to say. Go to the chat room. Go to the mailbag. Mitch writes, you know, and I can't pronounce the pitcher that pitched today for Anaheim. And I'm going to mess this one up. But I'm going to try because he's referencing the kid. And I got to tell you, I don't know how to pronounce his name. Let's see if I can do it here. Jack, let's see, hold on. Jack Kochanowicz. Kochanowicz, right? No, so Jack Kochanowicz. So Mitch writes, Kochanowicz can't get his breaking stuff over. So what kind of approach is it to swing at the breaking balls, which are predictably out of the zone and miss fastballs? Why aren't they waiting on a fastball and driving it? Mitch, 4A players, bad offensive players, bad hitters who are not major league hitters, who are below league average major league hitters, are not going to be able to do those things that you want. John Olerud is John Olerud. It was John Olerud because of who he was. Juan Soto is a great hitter because of who he is. Bad hitters don't have those approaches. And I think that's been one of the biggest disappointments is that, you know, someone like a Brett Beatty hasn't evolved. I mean, he's hardly walked this year. He's chased a lot. You know, so that to me answers that question, Mitch. Unfortunately, that's just the situation that the Mets are in. Joe writes, hey, let's give Stern some credit for Clay Holmes. That is a move that was worked out really well for the Mets. And Tim writes, I agree. I also like Tobias Myers. I know it's in fashion to bash Stearns, and I think Stearns has made some questionable moves. And I know that the big talk now is all of a sudden Carlos Cortez. How can the Mets get rid of Cortez, who the Mets basically let go early in Stearns' tenure back in, right after 2024? Look, Carlos Cortez is a DH. Carlos Cortez was hitting a 780 OPS in the minors. I know our friend David Mills always liked him when, you know, he used to come on and talk about prospects back then. He actually mentioned that on our show about a month ago. But I don't think Carlos Cortez is the hill to die on to prove that Stearns is a bad president of baseball operations. And I think the thing that I continue to tell people is firing Stearns is not firing a GM. You're firing a president of the baseball operations and you're firing the entire front office and you're starting from scratch. That's the part that nobody's talking about. If he was a GM, great. You fire the GM and you get somebody else. Now, you want to say he needs to bring in a GM to be a little yin to his yang and maybe bring somebody in that's less analytically inclined and has more of a scouting chops or a former player background? Well, that'd be Beltran. You have Beltran there. I don't know if Beltran wants to be a GM. He's already in the cabinet. Let's put it that way. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, if that's something they do. Do they bring in somebody along those lines to help Stearns? But not everything has been bad, and I think Clay Holmes has been a great move. I think Myers was a nice throw-in, and he's controllable. And I think if you're going to sign Luis Torrens, I wonder, can you get Holmes for 4 years, maybe $25 million a year, $100 million contract, something like that? You know, make sure, you know, maybe he opts out or before you add on to the opt-out or add on to the last year of the deal, another 4 years or something like that. Would the Mets be interested in something along those lines? So we'll see. You know, the way that Holmes is pitching right now, he's going to get paid, and he's also going to get you a bit of a haul at the deadline if you decide to trade him. He and Peralta could really go a long way in restocking the Mets farm system, and both are going to be free agents, and you can re-sign them again. So, you know, to me, that's the way I would go if they fall out. But, you know, all the signs right now is, and who knows where the Mets will be come August 3rd, the trade deadline. All signs are they're trying to, run this thing back. Andy writes, I was listening to the radio and they were discussing that some Mets fans at Yankee Stadium were cheering for Pete Alonso and holding signs asking him to come back. We need to move on. The reality is that we didn't win with the core players who were let go. They only made the playoffs twice, once on a miracle run, once after blowing a 10-game division lead, only to lose immediately. While we might have a slightly better record than 11-22 if we had kept them, the real issue wasn't letting them go, but how they were replaced. It's a struggle to look ahead of the remaining 130 games of the season that feels dull and lacks any real excitement. The lineups they put out there are a joke lately. Seeing the Yankees dominate only makes it harder. I just turned 40, and I'm still waiting for a time when the Mets can consistently compete with them year in and year out, but I'm beginning to assume it's just not going to happen. I also wonder about the future of Juan Soto. He certainly didn't sign up for this, and with an out in 3 years, I wonder if he'll want out sooner. It's also disappointing to see our top prospects turn into lazy hitters while players like Ben Rice, a 12th-round pick, become elite hitters elsewhere. I'll get off my soapbox now, but I wanted to voice those frustrations. Andy, these are legitimate frustrations. It's questioning, obviously, the development of the front office, not just the front office and how they have drafted, and that's with the turnover, but what goes on in the minor leagues. You know, why can the Yankees take a 12th round pick in Ben Rice, who always consistently, before he was hitting this year, always had good hard hit rates. But so did Mark Vientos, so did JD Davis, and they didn't realize the kind of success that Ben Rice has seen. I know, as you know, you're about 10 years my junior, Andy. I know it's frustrating. Winning is hard. Being a Mets fan is hard. Being a Mets fan in this town with the Yankees, an iconic franchise, is even harder. I understand the frustration with the lineup. I think this is going, the direction this is going, it's one of those seasons where you just got to put it in the trash. It's like a reboot of a computer. Like, hey, just reboot. This program is frozen. This is not working. Let's just start over. Now in baseball, it's a little bit easier said than done because there's collateral damage to what a 95 loss or 90 loss season, leads to. And you know, from a standpoint of the fans and connection with the players and the business sense, which I talked about over on the premium side this week, not going to be easy for them to draw to Citi Field. The honeymoon clearly with Cohen is over. The honeymoon with Stearns is over. These guys are now on the clock. They have to show that they could produce a winner. And when you win, you'll get the media off your back. You'll get the fans off your back. But I think one thing that Cohen has not been able to do is completely destroy that yoke of failure that's around their neck. And I think he's also not been able to push back or eliminate the LOL Mets component of what they've kind of fallen into that. The team, the fans perpetuate that with how they act. And then obviously a couple of missteps over the years has, kind of snowballed this whole thing. And I think Cohen hasn't been able to do that. So one thing I think, and I'll to kind of stay on Andy's theme about the young hitters and, you know, the lack thereof in the Mets system is that, you know, someone said to me this week, hey, Mike, why do you think this is now an issue? I mean, you talked about on the show all these years, all these drafts that they haven't produced anything, but they were able to win. They were able to win 101 games in 2022. They were able to compete in 2019 after they were down early. They competed, and I know they faded down the stretch in 21. They had it down 23. They almost went to the World Series in 24. How come they've been able to navigate this to a certain degree, and now all of a sudden this has fallen off the cliff? Well, here's the thing. The core players were always players that produced at a high level and played every day. When I talk about the core players, Lindor, Alonso, McNeil, Nimmo, guys like that that were core and were always there. Edwin Diaz always was available, would have slumps, but always available for the most part. Now he's out in LA, but he's always available. The pitching has always been okay. They've been able to figure out the pitching. And with the elite closer, they were always able to win close games because of the elite closer. And then they were able to sprinkle in some veterans around those core players like Todd Frazier, Wilson Ramos, Eduardo Escobar, Mark Canna. Even Daniel Vogelback for a hot minute wasn't bad as a component hitter. So they had some decent component pieces for a year or two that produced good enough to surround the core. But never did they ever have somebody, a young player, that stepped in more than for a half a minute that would allow them to pretty much take the pressure off of the core hitters. So when the core hitters went in a slump, that's when we used to say, hey, you know, the Mets have these brownouts. The lineups have these brownouts. Well, the reason they have these brownouts is because they don't have depth, and part of the reason they don't have depth is they don't have young players that are able to come up and put in any kind of quality time out there. And now those young players are asked to hit 4, 5, 6 in the lineup, 3, 4, 5, 6, not 7, 8, 9, not play a couple of times a week, play every day. And, you know, I think that to me is something that we took for granted. Now, I agree with Andy, time to move on. You want to go to Yankee Stadium, Pete, come back. Pete's not coming back. And the Mets are, if they had kept all those players, like my original plan was, keep Diaz, keep Alonso, not trade Nimmo, they'd have a losing record. Maybe they'd have a couple extra wins. Now, you'd be more connected to the players, and I understand that, and there is something to that from a business perspective. This is a business. But that doesn't mean that you're in a better place as a baseball team. And I think that's the misnomer here, that all of a sudden, because they see him hit a couple of home runs, Pete at Yankee Stadium, that putting him at first base, look, it's better than Vientos. But, you know, right now, Pete is marginally better than Vientos. Now, I'm not saying that's going to be like that at the end of the year. He's a guy that hits 35-100, and there's no reason to think he won't have that. But look, at some point, players fall off the cliff. You hit their mid-30s, they fall off the cliff. It will happen to Pete. Is it this year? Is it this contract? I don't know. So we'll see. So that's something there. All right, let's see what else we have here. Steve writes, media coverage and strange extension. I've been following your recent tweets with the sports Pope and Eoin O'Connor this past week. It's been very entertaining. So what Steve is writing is, you know, of course, Mike Francis is out for a couple of weeks, and I don't know why. I think he had some kind of, procedure, ill, you know, was sick, whatever. I'm glad he's doing well. But it was funny. The guy's been dormant for all this time, but he made sure to reappear on his podcast when there's Mets chaos to come in and lecture us about what a bad owner Steve Cohen is and how he's not George, because everybody forgets that George and everything about the Yankees was chaos until George got suspended, but we're not going to talk about that here. And then when I wrote and I tweeted at Mike, I said, you know, the dinosaur coming back to talk about a dinosaur concept, Mike subtweeted me by basically saying anybody could have a podcast. So I thought that was funny, that, you know, that whole thing back and forth. And Eoin O'Connor, he's another 90s journalist that it's pretty easy. It's writing about Yankee dominance, virtue signaling, anything that's out there that they could virtue signal, and beating up on bad teams and talking about, you know, heart and guts and, you know, fire this guy, hire that guy. You know, it's always a crisis that, you know, you have to write about. It's 90s style journalism. Knicks lose game 3, down 2-1 to the Hawks. You know, this is a referendum on everything. Everything's a referendum on something with the Eoin O'Connor 90s crowd. So, you know, that's kind of what I've always laughed about. They dust off their 90s columns. Look, you take an Eoin O'Connor column from the last few weeks over at The Athletic and just go back in the archives, look at something he wrote about the Yankees or the Mets back in the 90s, a turn of the century. It's the same column. Just change the name. So, Steve writes, I've also wanted to share some observations regarding how the media has been covering Carlos Mendoza and Stearns. It's interesting to notice the polar opposite treatment they receive. Media members seem to be over-defend and praise Mendoza without criticism, while they appear to much more negative towards Stearns. It feels unprofessional to hear the media join fans in using mocking nicknames like Boy Genius or Wonder Boy simply because he went to Harvard. My guess is that Mendoza might be more buddy-buddy with the press, as they treat him like a Hall of Fame manager while treating Stearns like a scrub. Curiously, despite the negative coverage, they never seem to ask Stearns any hard-hitting or challenging questions when they actually speak to him. So, Steve, I agree. I mean, I think there's some good beat writers. I've talked about that. There's a lot of bad ones. I think the beat has become kind of like this dumping ground for cheap and expensive talent, or cheap and expensive writers. I'll leave it at that, because if I say more, I'm going to get myself in trouble. And there is some good ones, Will Salmon being one of them, some really good ones out there, but not enough, not like the old days where you had them, you know, the News and the Post competing ferociously with top writers on both sides. As far as how they treat Mendoza, I don't know if I agree that Mendoza, skates. I mean, obviously Mendoza talks to them. I don't think Stearns is much talking behind the scenes. I think that's probably part of what angers the media. They don't talk. He doesn't talk to them. When he does, he's on the dais and he couches his words and he's careful. Can they hammer him? I don't think it's in their DNA to do that. I think they're afraid. I think it's easier to go to anonymous sources. I mean, when Bill Madden writes about anonymous Mets insiders, I mean, come on, you know it's probably going to be Eric Chavez that's going to give him a bad quote about Stearns. Anybody that was on the coaching staff that was let go last year is probably going to be able to get, if you want a negative Stearns comment, or you go to Adam Ottavino or somebody, you're going to be able to get the story you want at that point. Is there a certain anti-Ivy League component to Stearns? Yes. You know, that's a sentiment that's going across the country now. In a lot of ways, I think it's unfortunate. I understand some of it because of how those institutions have acted over the last, you know, decade or so. But, you know, I don't think that that should make you harshly judge Stearns any other way. So, you know, to me, I understand what you're saying here. The media is going to they have their story. They have the Yankees and the lionizing of the greatness of the Yankees and the constant harping and overemphasis and analysis of the struggling Mets. You know, and that's the thing I'm going to tell people. If your goal is to wake up in the morning, go on X and make a comment about the Mets haven't been this bad since this, and the Mets, are this bad in this category, or the Mets aren't hitting here, or, you know, just give a complaint about a former Met, or find a player that they should have signed that is doing better than what they have. Like, just stop watching. Like, that's the ultimate armchair quarterback at this point, you know. Sam writes, funeral of a season. Since Peterson pitched the complete game on that June night last year, they have gone 28 games under 500. Blame me, I was there that night, Sam. I remember, it was a great night. It is hard to comprehend how it's possibly this bad while actively trying to compete. When you look at 21, 23, 25, and now 26, they went all in to be a contender every time and have failed miserably each season. It's worth considering how uncommon it is for a team to go all in with no half measure 4 to 6 years and still experience such epic failures. Really think about that. This shouldn't be happening. Ironically, the 1 year they took a half measure was 24, which was the year they progressed the furthest. The situation in the minor leagues is equally concerning. While the system was great last year, it's been really down this year. Outside of Peña and Ewing, many notable prospects are underperforming. The minor league affiliates are combined 25 games under 500, with Brooklyn ranking 28th on offense for A advanced clubs and Binghamton ranking 30th for AA. This 2026 season feels like a season from hell. Finally, regarding the managerial situation, there seems to be no point in discussing Cora. Stearns would rather be punched in the face than hire him. It appears the young Ivy League executives prefer to avoid strong alpha personality managers who seek power, which explains why Stearns moved on from Buck and why Buck hasn't returned to the dugout. He's probably right about that. Buck, I think, would be a great man. I mean, I never thought Buck should have been let go. I mean, I've been saying that. You know, as far as the minor leagues, Sam, let's take a step back. You know, it is early. There is some real cold weather in some of these places that the Mets affiliates play in, Brooklyn and Binghamton, which could potentially be affecting some of the offense, that we're talking about. Look, Peña and Ewing right now are the cream of the crop with Ewing on the doorstep. I mean, we might see him. I said late in the year he might provide a spark. I mean, geez, with the way he's going, if he dominates AAA, you're going to see him, I think, by June 1st. Unless they're going to keep him down there to dominate and not bring him up for service time manipulation. I think that you're probably looking at a guy that, you know, if everything pans out the way you think, you know, he could be their version of Kenny Lofton. I mean, really, that's been kind of like, you know, maybe without the power, he's more like Brett Butler. But I'll say this, with the way he's been playing, he's a run creator in the form of what you saw when Brandon Nimmo first came up. I mean, really, with much better speed than Brandon Nimmo. So, I mean, that's a guy you could put at the top of the lineup, put Soto up there with Bichette. Now, all of a sudden, you got a strong top of the lineup. Maybe Benj could all of a sudden start to develop and give some pop to the bottom part of the lineup. I mean, with Benj and Ewing and, you know, potentially Soto, unless Soto moves to the DH spot, you got some real speed out there in the outfield and maybe some good gloves too as well. I mean, you saw what Benj did today. So understanding, Sam, the frustration. Tim writes, bringing the hammer down. While you're often known for being critical, I've noticed that you seem to be holding back your criticism of Stearns. Given his performance over the last 18 months, I find this quite peculiar. If you look up his transactions during that period, the number of misses is significant. In my view, his performance has been worse than Sandy's, despite Stearns having far greater resources and infrastructure advantages. He's currently botching the opportunity has not been impressive. I believe the high standards usually maintained have been lowered in this case. I would encourage you to be harder on him or hold him to the same standard as others, as his performance has simply not been good enough. So, Tim, here's the deal. I think that you're right. Stearns' performance hasn't been good enough. Why I'm saying I'm kind of looking at this a little bit more in totality when it comes to Stearns is he came in here at 24. He's been here 2 years. And he's been tasked with the following. Build an entire organization that has been topsy-turvy even through the first years of the Cohen regime because of turnover. And the way that, you know, Cohen has been trying to build an organization, win, build a front. They're trying to do a lot of different things that usually requires a whole reboot and reset. So he's coming in the middle of all this. I really firmly believe he wanted to do a certain component of reset in 24. And the OMG summer swung that to another way. And they figured, okay, let's continue to try to make this thing work and win while we rebuild. And now you're starting to see the bill come home, which we've talked about a lot the last couple of weeks, the young positional players. And he basically, look, and I said this on X earlier today, I think. You want to criticize the guy for basically having faith in his positional players, Beatty, Vientos, Alvarez, Mauricio, because that's what this offense is hinged on. Now, Mauricio's got another freak injury. Alvarez is not impressed with the bat. Beatty's been awful. Vientos has been awful. I mean, that's a criticism of Stearns. Then you criticize him for relying on his player development people and his cabinet of executives that thought that these guys could play. Which, by the way, it's not just them. That's been going back a couple of, you know, Brody drafted Brett Beatty. Epler held on to him and promoted him in the middle of a pennant race a couple of years back. So I don't think I've given him a pass. I think I understand the enormity of what he's been asked to do. And I think the grade is Tim. I think the grade is incomplete. That's what I'm saying. Nor do I don't think at all I think he's done a perfect job. I don't think he's done everything bad. Look, I just talked about what was being brought up in the chat room over at our extra innings over at the Substack. Clay Holmes, not bad. Tobias Myers, not bad. You know, bringing back Brooks Raley, not bad on a value deal. Oscar Brazenbaum, not bad. I mean, there's been some good moves. They've made some good moves. Iglesias was a good move a couple of years ago. They've been able, and there's going to be hits, and there's going to be misses, of course. Part of this is if you have a farm system that produces more A.J. Ewings, you don't need to go out there and roll the dice on a trash or treasure lottery ticket. James writes, Mike, I listened to your premium content piece, Business Interference with Baseball. So for those that aren't part of it, what I do is during the week I put out a couple of mini podcasts talking about a topic. I was at the Mets game on Wednesday, noticed how empty the place was, how, you know, this kind of situation, especially if the Mets rebuild like I've been suggesting, how bad it is for business. And then I heard somebody on the bathroom while I was leaving the ballpark. I went to the bathroom talking about, hey, I don't mind coming here when they're bad, but for the prices, the parking being $50, the tickets, the food, I don't know if I want to come here at those prices. And that's going to be a big difference. And while you might see Citi Field emptier than normal if they fall out of this thing, because the cost of things today to go to the ballpark is so much more than, let's say, 1992 or 1993, the worst team money could buy, when the Mets fall out of that thing and they're not playing well, well, you could still go to Shea Stadium back then for a reasonable ticket price and some a reasonable day out. A lot more things to do than 35 years ago. So anyway, James writes, I agree with the guy on the bathroom line. I'm also for a mini or even deeper rebuild. The problem with this team, besides the fact that they suck, is they want homegrown. They want homegrown players. I think you miss James. I'm sorry. I think you typoed this. There went homegrown players who had success on the roster. We've seen flashes, but now no Beatty and Vientos and Mauricio 4A players. Alvy might be the biggest tease too. Benj is still having a story written. After that, none of the roster's guys have any meaning to the fans. Mercenaries, if you will. Soto, of course, is the big money guy and is still endearing himself to the fan base. Lindor is a guy that the fans have grown to love for the most part. The rest of the team is foreign to us. Losing the way they are leads to fans having zero interest in the team. There also isn't any fire guys on the roster. The team just isn't exciting. It's great Stearns went out and got professional players, but there isn't a fan connection to any of them. Playing like this will keep fans disinterested the rest of the season. Stearns is supposedly the market for a big bat, but when he has one in Clifford down in Syracuse, why won't he bring him up? Sure, he's a three-outcome player, but balls leaving the yard is something this team doesn't have aside from Soto. Lindor is hurt now, and Ewing just hit AAA, and Morabito is tearing the cover off the ball. Bring the kids up. This season is over, and the fans will come to the park to see the meme of the losing continues. You've been hearing about them for a while now. We've got some arms, too. The Braves bring up pitchers from AA all the time. It's time to breathe some life into the team, and trading good prospects for one bat isn't going to change the direction of this team if you keep putting the same arms on the bump. Benj is in the top seven, I heard, in defensive run save. He's also starting to hit. Team needs youth. So, you know, James is basically talking about, and maybe this is why when I saw the move about keeping Mendoza and then extending Torrens, this is might very well be where this team is going later in the year. They're looking at the pitching being what it is, looking at Tong, looking at some of the young kids in the minors, Ewing, what have you, and say, hey, we're going to be able to incorporate these with veterans coming back healthy, and maybe there will be a more exciting team later in the year. I think that this replace-a-Mets, so to speak, mercenary roster, the Austin Slaters, the Ibanez's, these guys that are going to be shuttling on, in and out, this is only temporary. Now, if you talk about mercenaries like Bichette and Polanco, I understand that. The whole getting to know you phase has been disrupted by injury, has been disrupted by this historic losing streak, has really, if this was a first date, you couldn't get off to a worse first date. The 2026 Mets and the fans, this is about as bad of a first date as you're ever going to get. I don't know. I haven't done dating profiles in a long time. I've been married for a long time. But if this was Hinge or Match.com, I don't even know if that's a thing anymore, what would the Mets profile be? What would they say? Beware? Mercenaries? Cheap date? Expensive date? I don't know. Maybe you guys could come up with something there. So, joke gone bad, let's put it that way. So, Matthew writes, a true rebuild. Hi, Mike. I wish I was writing to you in different times. The beginning of this year has been a colossal disappointment, to say the least. I'm afraid I'm one of those fans who will become numb to the losses in season already. It's the first time I felt like this in the Steve Cohen era, which is making it all the more difficult. In previous years, the Mets were not doing well. I could always hang my hat on the fact that the owners were not very good and did not seem terribly interested in building a perennial contender. Steve Cohen put an end to this, which has been a breath of fresh air. But I'm no longer able to blame ownership for not committing to the team. It's also hard for me to hate on Stern since he was the front office guy we've all been waiting for. The genius front office guy that was going to be able to put together a sustained winner was finally here, and our prayers have been answered. If we really get to a place where we had the ideal owner and the president of baseball ops, then everything else would fall into place, right? But sadly, that has not happened. We're all left scratching our heads for answers. I can't help but think that part of the reason for the state of the Mets today is that they tried to build up the farm system while trying to compete for a championship, which has always been a difficult thing to do. There's also something about playing here that is challenging for free agents, and they rarely get off to a fast start. We've been trying to win it all every year since Steve Cohen got here, and while there have been some great moments, the sustaining competitive team has eluded us. I also think that getting rid of so many players that we've come to know and love has been detrimental to my feelings toward this year's team. I'm sure winning would help that, but the lifeless energy that the current roster has makes me think this is not a cohesive and tight unit. At least if Pete, Nimmo, McNeil, and Diaz were here, I'd feel more of a connection to the team. But with this current roster, I'm finding it difficult to care as much. I think having a solid crop of successful homegrown talent is something to strive for, as it can make connecting with the team easier. I know Mets fans want to win and want to win now, but I'm tired of getting my hopes up only to be rewarded with inconsistent production at best. At this point, I'm all for rebuild, and even if that means a full rebuild, I'd be okay with it. I'm sure getting rid of Soto and Lindor is off the table, but in all honesty, I don't think I'd be up in arms about moving on from either of them. It's hard saying that, but what good does having two of the best overall players on your team do if you're not winning ball games? Maybe a full rebuild for a few years where we can really focus on the farm system and player development, along with not having the pressure to meet huge expectations with the answer. I know you've been mentioning a small rebuild, but I'm curious as to your thoughts on more of a full-blown rebuild. Thanks so much for the great content. Keep it up. Matt, it is a bold move to do a full rebuild. I think that since Sandy Alderson left in 2018, it's been that kind of elephant in the room. And I couldn't criticize if Stearns and Cohen came out and said, look, this isn't going to work. I want to do a full rebuild. I don't even think a full rebuild, and let's say they could get rid of Lindor and Soto, I don't think it would be a 5-6 year downturn. It would be a couple of years. I think with the kind of pitching that they seem to be projecting coming out of the minors, and look, Christian Scott looked really good. If you have McClain, Scott, maybe Jonah Tong, if you could hit on three of these guys, and then you have a veteran like a Holmes in that rotation, and maybe a lower down the tier back in the rotation starter, either from the outside or with the whatever was left in terms of pitcher development. That's not bad to have those kind of arms. I mean, the last time they had controllable young arms, Syndergaard, Harvey, DeGrom, Mats, Wheeler, that worked out pretty well. I mean, again, part of the problem there was they didn't have the offensive talent. I don't know if, and I go back to what I talked about after leaving the ballpark on Wednesday, the expensive nature of this team, the ego of a Cohen, the fact that he wants to be able to sell this to his Wall Street buddies, get big-time sponsors. That doesn't align with a full rebuild. It makes you wonder in New York if the environment in New York, the expectations of New York, a lot of the things that go with being a New York team, the interest that you have to keep people involved in, you know, it goes against basic business, basic baseball principles. Look, in a vacuum, you blow the thing up and you rebuild. But in a vacuum, you don't have the expensive Citi Field sitting empty for 2 years. You don't have the Yankees across town. You don't have all these other entertainment options. You don't lose another generation of young fans who are disinterested in a boring and bad Mets team, while because they're not interested in sitting around waiting for the farm system. Matt, you are. I am. We're longtime Mets fans. We understand the business of baseball. We understand player development. We understand playing a little bit of front office mogul here. But Joe and Jane, average fan, don't want to deal with that. They want to go and they want to see a winning ball club, and they want to see a winning ball club now. I mean, we're in a world which every problem on the sports and political landscape, they want it solved in 90 minutes like it's a Netflix movie. So when you're trying to make money and you're losing a couple hundred million on payroll every year, and you're Steve Cohen and you're building a casino across the street and you have a beautiful football stadium across the street and you're trying to build this environment and, you know, hub, I don't know if having 2 years of bad baseball and getting number one draft picks and excitement down in Brooklyn and Binghamton and up in Syracuse is something that you can sell to your Wall Street investors. Your Wall Street investors that have connections and sponsors and want to come and spend big money at the Speakeasy Club out in right field. You know, so to me, that's part of it. But the takeaway here from a lot of you is, and this is a common thread, you don't feel a connection to the club because of all the new faces. The losing has exacerbated that lack of connection. You're torn on a rebuild. You need something to excite you, whether it be a managerial change, some kind of front office shakeup, a young kid being brought up that's going to spark some energy. Think like Greg Jeffries in 88, or when Timo Perez came up in 2000, or to a certain degree when Pete Alonso came up in 2019, how he sparked that team. I think that was a big thing back then. So that's a constant theme. And the message that we got from the Mets here this weekend is stay the course. Stay the course with the manager. Continue to keep the core players that have been here, the veterans here, by re-signing Torrens. Keep them here. Does not signal that they'll do a rebuild. So, right now, they're hanging their hat on. It's early. We have some good pitching. We have key core offensive players that are on the way back. Don't be surprised they start trolling around for a big money bat that a bad team like the Astros or Minnesota or Tatis Jr.'s name gets thrown around all the time. Somebody that, team that's looking to dump a salary, very little return other than using Steve Cohen's money. Those are the kind of things I feel that are on the table here. Not a full rebuild, not a partial rebuild. And I think part of that is because of what you all have said. You have no connection with the team. You're losing interest. It's clear by the attendance the other day at Citi Field. Let's see how it is when they come back home and, they have some home games and better weather on a weekend. Let's see how it is. But a lot of that is, and the nature of New York is why winning here is hard. Just because you have a great owner and a great president of baseball operations doesn't mean that they're allowed to run the business in the way that is necessary to build it in the same manner that the Astros were built and the Dodgers were built and the Cubs were built and things like that. Look, five-year knock-it-down rebuild, Mets did that. Last time they did that was 1980. It's been a long time since they did that. The Astros and Cubs did that about 15 years ago. Both got championships out of it. But it's hard. It's hard to do, and I'm not sure you can do it that easily here. You might eventually be forced into it. I just don't think Cohen's going to do that right now. I don't think Cohen wants to spend the next 2 years looking at his ballpark be empty. I just don't. I don't see him doing that. I think he feels that you could spend money some way, somehow, even to get to the point where I think his, even if you're just competing for a wild card, I think he's going to want to spend money to do that, even if it means losing on maybe a bad contract because it's going to bring people to the ballpark. It's going to keep interest in the team. And as long as it doesn't compromise their ability to move forward in another facet of the roster, it doesn't harm them from being able to spend and sign a big free agent down the road, he's going to do it. And you have to wonder, eventually, you have enough dead money on a roster, yeah, it's going to harm you, but maybe he doesn't feel that way. I mean, think about it. Wouldn't you feel, 4 years or so left, Mike Trout, I know he's an injury risk, bringing a Mike Trout into patrol center field for the Mets, how would that make everybody feel? You put Benj in one corner, you put Ewing in another corner, or maybe, Trout comes here and you don't move him out of center field, to preserve him a little bit. Just something to think about. So, anyway, that's where we're at. Another week in the books here at the Talking Mets podcast. We're almost done with the getting to know you phase. I have not officially waved the white flag. So, I haven't waved the white flag yet. I haven't officially said that this team is not, out of it. I know it doesn't look good. I'm not at that point. It's teetering, though, I got to tell you. 10, 11 games on the 500, you're teetering to that point where the white flag is going up. But the getting to know you phase goes to the end of May. It goes to Memorial Day. We're still a couple of weeks away from that. So let's just stick to our original timelines here at the Talking Mets podcast. All right, that's it. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets No G and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on the new and improved talkingmetspodcast.com. Chat for free, premium content, updates on the show, all at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. And I want to thank the good folks on Believe Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. We'll be back with another Talking Mets podcast next week. Till then, take care, everybody.